Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Mix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20.
Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it. They do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, was back to throw. Finds the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds?
Yes. Manningham on the sideline.
Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, Lance Meadow.
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us as we start up a new week here on our team website. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on the conversation using Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You can follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Want to touch on tight ends this morning, get into the Giants depth chart. Who do you think is going to win out and claim that starting tight end job? A lot of unknown commodities, some unproven players on this roster, but everybody has an ample opportunity to really take the bull by the horns and claim that job, specifically a guy like Adrian Robinson, who now is starting to come into his own, but he still has a lot to prove come training camp. So we'll get into that. Also want to touch on the tight end depth charts in the NFC East, who the Cowboys will be turning to, the Eagles and the Redskins respectively. So we'll get into that. If you want to weigh in on any other topic, feel free to throw it out there on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You can directly get me at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. A number of you have reached out to me on Facebook, so I want to address some of the comments that you threw out regarding some topics that we discussed last week and some of the things that Paul may have brought up on Friday. I know he talked in great detail about the offensive line and some of the different alignments that the Giants could toy with come training camp. But before we get to that, I know everybody is dying to know what transpired this weekend in the Midwest. Now, John Schmelk is officially off the market, so I know all of the ladies out there are disappointed to hear that. And before we get into all the congratulations for John Schmelk when he does come back, you know, how about I get a pat on the back for actually surviving Iowa? You know, the sacrifices that I had to make to go out to the middle of the country and a Brooklyn boy being caught in the middle of the country and coming back in one piece, I think says a lot about what I had to deal with throughout the course of this weekend. So before we pat John Schmelk on the back 105 times, let's also take into consideration what I had to delve into over the course of this weekend. But in big picture perspective, it was a lovely affair. I know a number of you are probably going to want details. And I did come through with a photo. So for any of you who are interested to see John in a precarious situation, I got a little payback because he has taken some photos without my approval throughout the course of the season when we do the show, when we're out on the field, so forth. So I was pretty crafty with the cell phone, and I did snag a photo, and I put hashtag Giants Chat on there. You go directly to my account, or you can scroll through tons of the tweets that were sent out under hashtag Giants Chat. But I advise you to do some homework and take a look at the photo because I did catch John Schmelk in action celebrating his big day. But with that being said, do not want to take up the entire program on the ins and outs of the wedding. If you want to weigh in on that, feel free to. I'm not going to necessarily back down on trying to take some jabs at John. I certainly enjoy taking part in those type of festivities throughout the program here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. But let's start things off from the Giants' perspective because that's why we're here each and every morning to discuss the ins and outs with respect to the Giants. And this is clearly a relatively quiet time, it goes without saying, until we get to July 21st when the players will start to report and then the 22nd they'll have their first practice. And remember, the Giants are going to start a little bit earlier than most teams because the Giants and the Bills are going to take part in that first Hall of Fame preseason game. They have the extra preseason game. They're going to have five. Everybody else has four. And you're entitled to start X amount of days before your first preseason game. So since the Giants and Bills have the first preseason game, they are going to kick off camp much earlier than any other team. But before we get to the start of camp, you know, this is the quiet period. And you'll want it to stay quiet, no matter what team you're associated with. You don't want to hear anything about your players. This is the time where you should not be hearing anything. No chatter, no nothing. Why? Because they're all doing their own thing. They're working out on their own. Same thing with the coaching staff. So no news is good news during the course of the next few weeks. You do not want to hear a peep out of any of the players. Come latter part of July, that's when you'll start to hear some more and more activity. With respect to the tight end situation, and this is a position, and we touched on this a little last week. A number of you have weighed in, and it seems to be a topic that will not go away anytime soon. Why? Because we don't know who's going to take claim of this job. You have Adrian Robinson, who is coming into his third year with the Giants, but we haven't seen much out of Adrian Robinson. And mainly, it's been because of the injury bug. Whenever he's gotten out there, he's been hurt, and he hasn't been able to take advantage of his opportunities. And during the course of practices and so forth, hasn't necessarily stood out from the rest of the pack. But the main difference between Adrian Robinson of 2012 and Adrian Robinson of 2013 and Adrian Robinson of 2014 now, as we enter a new training camp, new start of the season, is the fact that if you look at his first 2 years in the league, the Giants had a tight end, a guy that, without question, he was going to be the number one. And I'm not saying, and I'm not here to debate whether or not he turned out to be the number one, but you can't argue the fact that 2012, Martellus Bennett was signed to be the guy. He was number one on the depth chart, won the job out in training camp. And Adrian Robinson was still digesting the playbook at that point. Last year, okay, Robinson still knows Gilbride's offense, hadn't changed offensive coordinators, but he was dealing with injuries. And then you had Brandon Myers, who was signed to take the place of Martellus Bennett. And Brandon Myers became a big topic of discussion throughout the course of last season because the numbers did not pick up where they left off from Oakland. But you knew coming in day one, week one of the regular season, Brandon Myers was the starting tight end. And Adrian Robinson was not able to do anything to move ahead of Brandon Myers. It didn't come until the Lions game, which was very late in the season. We're talking week 16, where Robinson is active finally, and he gets out there for the opening kickoff, and he gets hurt. And we didn't see any more of Adrian Robinson from that point on. This year, there is no Martellus Bennett. There is no Brandon Myers. There is no Kevin Boss. There is no Jake Ballard. It's Adrian Robinson, and yes, you have a few veterans in camp. And I suggest that, speaking of the tight end position, you check out on Giants.com. Dan Salamone, one of our top writers, just posted an article. He named a few under-the-radar players, and one of the players that he threw out there was Daniel Fells. And Fells is the veteran of this group. He's the proven commodity. Not a flashy guy, not a guy that has put up explosive numbers during the course of his career. He's been pretty much a journeyman as he enters year number seven in the league, but you know what you're going to get out of Daniel Fells. The other players really flipping a coin at this point. Xavier Grimble, the unsigned free agent out of USC. He's got the size. He was utilized as a receiver in the USC offense, but let's see what it translates in the NFL to. So there's a question mark regarding him. Adrian Robinson, there's a question mark entering year number three. Can he stay healthy, and can he digest this new offense? And can he separate himself from the group? Then after that, you have Larry Donnell entering his second year out of Grambling, was on the roster last year, and had a very good training camp, Larry Donnell, but then again was playing behind Brandon Myers, and also dealt with injuries, so that stunted his growth to a certain degree. That was his issue. Can he stay healthy now entering this training camp? And Kellen Davis, who they brought in from the Seattle Seahawks, not a big-time receiver during the course of his career, and he's entering year number seven, so he's a veteran just like Daniel Fells. And Davis also spent some time with the Chicago Bears, but the two veterans that they have on this team don't have a track record of being a consistent receiving threat. Now, we have yet to really determine how the tight end is going to be utilized on this offense. Right now, it's the speculative stage. You've seen some schemes that Ben McAdoo has utilized during OTAs and minicamp, and we've talked about that in great detail on this program, where they're going to spread the wealth with the wide receivers. They're probably going to put out 3-4 wide receivers out there at a time. And tight ends are running routes. It's not as if the tight ends are being held back as that sixth offensive lineman time and time again. So they're going to be utilized. And all of them have pretty much been split up with the reps during OTAs and minicamp. I thought Adrian Robinson, he's made some plays, but you can only tell so much without pads. Dinnell's made some plays. Fels has made some plays. I could tell you Grimble's made some plays. They've all made catches. As we enter camp, if you were to ask me the question, has any of them really jumped off the page or jumped off the screen, to give you an answer would be me really stretching it and taking something that there's not a lot of substance there and me trying to fine-tune it to give you a good answer. I think Adrian Robinson has an opportunity here. And I know we talk about this every year, but there is an opportunity here more so than in 2012 and 2013. Why? Because there's no one standing in his way. The only person that is going to hurt Adrian Robinson is Adrian Robinson himself. But you listen to what he said coming into camp. He sees that the writing's on the wall in terms of the physical shape that he's entered camp, in terms of what the coaching staff has seen out of him. Kevin M. Gilbride, Kevin Gilbride's son, is now the tight ends coach this season. He was the wide receivers coach last season, and he's now working much more closely with Adrian Robinson. And one of the things that Kevin M. Gilbride was asked was, what changes have you seen with respect to Adrian Robinson? And Kevin M. Gilbride even admitted, you know, it's hard for me to give you that answer because I worked with the wide receivers last season. So I saw him in terms of the type of routes that he was running during the course of practice here or there, but from afar, he did not see the Adrian Robinson in the film room. So now he's getting his first taste of Adrian Robinson in the film room, and Kevin M. Gilbride likes what he's seen, but he's got nothing to compare that to. So we're all going based on what a new voice is telling us. But the one thing I could tell you that I think bodes well for Adrian Robinson more so this season than any other season is he's got a fresh start. Yes, to the fan base, to you out there listening, you're thinking about all the baggage he's carrying with him. But to this coaching staff, to Ben McAdoo, he looked at the film from previous seasons, but what is Ben McAdoo going to see out of Adrian Robinson? Adrian Robinson was barely out there during a game. So there's a fresh start with the offensive core here. There's a fresh start with the tight end coach because that's two new positional coaches that Adrian Robinson had yet to work with. So I think that at least is a positive for Robinson. These are all the factors that are, you know, surrounding Adrian Robinson. From an X's and O's perspective, he still needs to take advantage out of that. Now, getting back to Dan Salamone's article on Giants.com, Dan highlights Daniel Fels as one of the three under-the-radar players. He also points out Quinton Demps, the safety, who I've been very high on, as well as Trindon Holliday, and then cornerback Charles James. Now, James has been on the practice squad. James has also been thrown into the rotation during games, and that's just another guy that adds depth to this cornerback depth chart. I don't necessarily want to get into those two, but if you want to weigh in on those two players in particular, feel free to give us a call. Feel free to chime in on Twitter. I want to focus on Daniel Fels only because the topic at hand today is on the tight ends. And Dan throws out a number of Fels numbers during the course of this article, and it's interesting when you look at Daniel Fels' numbers, this just goes to show you how inexperienced, or I don't want to say the lack of productivity you have in this tight end group, but you know, guys just have not taken advantage of their opportunities. Fels, he's a 6-year vet because he's entering year number 7. So he's had 71 games under his belt, 30 starts, 92 career catches, 1,086 yards, and 8 touchdowns. You can add up all the other tight ends on this roster. Daniel Fels' career numbers would still knock those out of the park. So that just goes to show you there isn't anyone on this roster to me that's that wow factor. But that doesn't mean that somebody's not going to wow us during the course of training camp, during the course of a preseason game, or maybe it's somebody that didn't do much of anything during preseason and training camp. You get to week one of the regular season and wow. You see Eli Manning hook up with a guy. Jake Ballard was not a player that did much of anything where you were heading into the season and said, hey, Jake Ballard's going to be a playmaker. Watch out. Jake Ballard is going to be the guy. And then you get into the heart of the regular season. Jake Ballard's making plays. Jake Ballard has good chemistry with Eli Manning. So there could be a player that they keep on the roster, and you assume they're probably going to keep about three tight ends. Perhaps how they utilize the fullback or an added running back could change that, but I think you need to keep three tight ends, especially where you're going to probably have a veteran, and behind the veteran you're going to have two guys that, you know, one of them may have had experience but hasn't had a lot of regular season experience, and another one who could be a rookie like Grimble, who is still trying to make the transition from the college game to the NFL game. Now, before we get to your phone calls, before we get to more of your tweets, I want to get to a Facebook posting, which was very detailed, and it just goes to show you the reach that we get on this show, and we appreciate everybody overseas who may be listening. It's a good way to keep up with the team. And Jim wrote to me all the way from Ecuador. He listens to the show each and every morning, and the tight end subject is something that really has caught his attention. And this is what Jim writes, and I'm sure a number of you share his sentiments, but I just want to read some of the comments. Jim writes to me on Facebook, "I'm busy during the day, so I always hear the tape later in the day," referring to the show. "Regarding tight ends, I'm perplexed about this situation when I hear we should be looking at one or two free agents still available." And there's a lot of speculation about Jermichael Finley and so forth, but Finley specifically, that's who he was referring to. "My point is simple. We have tight ends on this team that have been here. We need to throw them into the fire for a full season and in the end either re-sign them or let them go. I don't like the idea of keeping these guys on the payroll year after year as we search for more proven tight ends. If we aren't going to play them, get rid of them." So that was his point about the tight end situation. There's been a lot of turnover at the tight end position for this team, but the turnover has really come from the top, meaning the starting position. Now, a lot of it has been financial. Martellus Bennett, the Bears gave him a big-time offer, and the Giants were not in a position where they had the flexibility to match that. I feel that this topic gets misinterpreted. It wasn't as if the Giants didn't want Martellus Bennett back. Let's make that clear. It was a matter of the Bears had a lot more money to throw around, and Martellus Bennett was given a deal where he got $5 million a year from the Bears, and it's worked out well for the Bears. He's been a great complement to their 1-2 receiving punch with Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall, but when it came to the figures, the Giants just did not have the flexibility. They went out, they brought in Brandon Myers. They didn't break open the piggy bank with Brandon Myers, and the transition didn't work out well with Brandon Myers. Now, this offseason, there was not a lot of attractive options in the tight end department out on the market. It wasn't as if, you know, the Giants didn't do their due diligence or passed up on guys time and time again. Jermichael Finley was probably the one player that got the most attention, and we knew that he was coming into this offseason recovering from a major injury. So it's a lot different than a Jermichael Finley who's fully healthy and you say, okay, he's got familiarity with Ben McAdoo. Let's throw him into the fire. Let's try to give him an incentive-based deal or something to that nature. That was not the situation. Jermichael Finley has yet to get clearance. I know there were reports out there that he spoke with the New England Patriots, but outside of that, we're not talking about a guy that you know is going to come in and all of a sudden make immediate contributions. Plus, and I know a number of you have written this on Twitter, you know, what's the worst? Let's take a chance. I believe it was Mike Farmer on Twitter. And I threw out to counter that, Finley, okay, he comes in. Let's not forget, he's got to now learn a new offense. Now, you want to say, oh, well, he's familiar with the Ben McAdoo principles because he's coming from Green Bay. That's fine. But you're going to tell me Ben McAdoo's bringing the Green Bay playbook with him and that's it? He hasn't tried to tweak it? Hasn't tried to change it? Let's not be naive here. So even a veteran would have to learn an offense, and an offense that a lot of the veterans had a few months already to fully digest. And they're having trouble with it still. Or I shouldn't say trouble, that may not be a fair word, but they're at least still trying to get a hold of all the principles. Everything's not necessarily smooth sailing as we're getting set to enter training camp. With respect to Jim's points about how they're holding on to these guys, you can make that argument with respect to the depth chart, but it's hard to make that argument. I mean, you look at the five tight ends that are on the roster this season, and maybe there's a stronger point to back up Jim's claim in previous years, but let's look at the five tight ends. Daniel Fells was not on the roster last season. Kellen Davis was not on the roster last season. Xavier Grimble was not on the roster. Three of the five tight ends were not on the roster last season. Larry Dinnell and Adrian Robinson are the only two players that have returned at that position. And Larry Dinnell, last year was his first year on the Giants. He's entering year number two. So the evaluation period is limited for Larry Dinnell. Then you go to Adrian Robinson. Robinson is the only guy that you could point to that falls maybe under Jim's criteria where, okay, you've seen this, you've seen that. What are you waiting for? However, Adrian Robinson's still on his rookie contract. He's not breaking open the piggy bank. And those are the guys that you don't necessarily want to part ways with so quickly because you still have them at a point where financially it makes sense. And once again, even though he's had 2 years because of not being able to digest the playbook and not being able to stay healthy, the Giants right now have not seen so much of him. This, to me, is the make-or-break year for Adrian Robinson. Why? Because you're giving him an opportunity to learn a new offense. You're giving him an opportunity to win the starting job without anyone standing in his way. So, with that being said, if he can't take advantage of these opportunities, then I think there's enough to say, okay, we've seen what we get out of Adrian Robinson. But this is a very critical training camp for him and a very critical regular season because you can only do so much during training camp, but if he makes the 53-man roster, that final cut, and he doesn't do much during the regular season, then I think the Giants can say to themselves, okay, 3 years of Adrian Robinson, at this point we need to look at other options. But let's see what happens during the course of this training camp and during the course of this regular season before we fully write the script for Robinson. In this league, as you've seen with the Seattle Seahawks and some other teams that have won, they've built the nucleus of their squad through the draft, meaning they haven't thrown out a great deal of money at free agents. They've used that money to complement a young nucleus. You have to strike with your draft. And we talk about that each and every year with the rookie class for the Giants. So if you have players that are not eating into your salary cap at the rookie level, and the rookie contracts are pretty much on a scale compared to the old CBAs, you don't want to be so quick to get rid of them because once you get rid of them, you're going to have to fill the spot with not necessarily a rookie, but a veteran. And the veteran is going to take up some space in your payroll. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. I know a number of you are waiting on the phone lines. I want to get to your tweets as well. So without further ado, let's open it up at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. Follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. We start things off with AJ in South Carolina. AJ, what's happening?
Good morning, Lance. I got two questions for you.
Sure. What you got, AJ?
How many times do you think we'll make the roster?
I believe they're going to keep three. I would be surprised if they keep more than that. And the reason I say that is they've got offensive linemen that have some experience going out and at least running tight end routes. So that gives you at least some added depth. And I think if you keep a guy like Peyton Hillis, who could play fullback, who could play running back, you can put him out there as a wide receiver because he probably has the best hands out of that whole receiving core with possibly the exception of Rashad Jennings. I think they're going to look to have more depth at other positions because they have versatility there. So I'm saying three is going to be the number, and three has pretty much been the number that they have stuck to in previous seasons. Perhaps in years past they've held four. I'm thinking they're going to keep three. I don't think they need to keep any more than three between minicamps, OTA, and training camp. I think they're going to get enough out of this core to see which of the top three guys that are healthy day one we could keep on this roster.
Who are your top three, give me the names, who you think?
Well, that's a great question. As it stands here today, it's tough to give you an answer, but I'll give you my three right now just based on pure potential, based on what I've seen out of minicamp and who may be a good fit on this roster. I'll say Kellen Davis, Daniel Fells, and I'm going to go with Adrian Robinson. I think Adrian Robinson makes this team, and I think that he is going to take advantage of his opportunities in training camp because he's healthy, first of all. That doesn't mean he's not going to re-aggravate an injury, but I think that we're going to see much more out of Adrian Robinson than we've seen in any 2 years combined because he's going to show that he has some durability in the tank. You know, Grimble, it's a matter of whether or not he can fully adapt to the offense. And Dinnell, you know, Dinnell is somewhat on the same stage as Adrian Robinson, but Robinson, to me, you can make the argument has a little bit more upside. So those would be my three. I think they're going to go with two established vets, and they're going to keep Robinson, who at this point you can really still consider a rookie, considering he hasn't put up a great deal of numbers and he hasn't stayed healthy.
Oh, yeah. I got one more question. I want to see the Cops make the roster on special team. Do you think he will make the big three main on special team?
Who is that, AJ? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the name. What was the player that you were throwing out there about special teams?
Michael Cox.
Michael Cox. Well, the problem with Michael Cox, special teams is going to help him out, AJ, but I think they look at players who not only are going to be able to help out on special teams, but you know they're going to be in some type of a rotation at their other position. And Michael Cox is in a position where the numbers game does not favor him at running back, because if you look at the running backs, Rashad Jennings is a definite. David Wilson is a question mark, but if David Wilson is healthy, gets back to the rookie contract situation, you're not going to be so quick to part ways with David Wilson. So I'm going to pencil in David Wilson, Rashad Jennings, as I threw out there, Andre Williams, who they just drafted, I would say is pretty much a definite to be on this roster. So I just threw out three guys to you, and if there's anybody who they would keep in that fourth slot to me, it would be a Peyton Hillis, because as I just mentioned, he could probably go out there and play three positions. So the problem is, unless Michael Cox absolutely wows all of us during the course of training camp and does things in these preseason games that we never anticipated, I think it's going to be very hard for Michael Cox to make this roster, AJ, even if he makes some game-changing plays on special teams.
Thanks for taking my call, Lance.
Not a problem, AJ. Good to hear from you. Appreciate you chiming in this morning. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. We have some open lines. Feel free to give us a call. I'll get to your tweets as well at hashtag Giants Chat at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Let's go to our good buddy Derek in the ATL. Derek, what's happening this morning?
Good morning, Lance. How are you doing today?
Good morning to you, Derek. Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm good. Hey, about 2 years ago, I had to go to Iowa for work for about 2 weeks. You know, from being from New Jersey and now living in Atlanta, boy, I congratulate you for surviving.
Thank you. Yes, it was some experience. And I'm a city guy, as you know. And listen, you're from Jersey, so you understand what the city's all about. And I like visiting my fair share of cities. But Des Moines, I mean, it was like a ghost town. That downtown area. I was expecting some lively action, and I didn't see it until, you know, maybe the bars were starting to fill out during the course of the evening. But during the day, my goodness, I mean, where were the people? Jeez.
Yeah, that's what my thing was. It was like 9 o'clock, and it was like everything was shut down. I was like, oh, my God.
Absolutely.
But anyway, for the Giants, what was intriguing is that Jerry Reese said earlier this season that he wasn't concerned about the tight end position on the Bleacher Report thing that he did. I think they got it right off a press conference that he just came out of. And I think I did see that press conference. He's not concerned with the tight ends. And I was thinking, like, I think I talked to John last week or a week before he left and said, I don't understand all the reports coming out of saying that the Giants was looking at the tight end and the progression maybe as a first or second option. And I'm like, do they really think that the tight end is not a problem? And if they it kind of seemed like they had to, because they didn't go get a tight end out of free agency and they didn't get one in the draft.
Well, I go back to the point that you look at what Ben McAdoo has done in Green Bay, and I've debated a number of Giants listeners on this front, and I'm not sure where you stand, Derek, but McAdoo has had a track record of taking tight ends that, you know, don't necessarily jump off the page, and he's made them pretty productive in Green Bay. The two guys that come to mind are Tom Crabtree, who then left to go to Tampa Bay, and then you look at Andrew Corliss, who last year took over for Jermichael Finley, and let's not forget Finley. Before Finley became Jermichael Finley, keep in mind he was a young guy who no one heard of. So, you know, those three guys that I just named, Derek, could be three guys that are on the Giants roster. And you say, okay, right now we're not giving them a lot of credit. But perhaps with the way this offense functioned and how Ben McAdoo tweaks their mechanics, maybe they could turn out to be something. And depending on how this receiving core pans out, perhaps that will give more opportunities for the tight ends to have some favorable matchups. So, I mean, I know I threw out a lot of ifs, a lot of coulda, woulda, shouldas, but I think if you take into consideration all those other factors, there is a possibility that there are one or two tight ends on this roster that could become playmakers.
Yeah, I got a couple of other things. I think, first of all, in your last caller, I do think they'll find a way to make Larry Donnell get a position on this team because he's young, and he did show a little bit of promise last year.
He did, I agree.
So I think they'll try to fit him into the system somehow. Another thing about these 1 year, we talked about Martellus Bennett and some of the other players that they do. I don't like these 1 year contracts. I think, you know, I know it's a two-way thing, but
well, look
I think
at Brandon Myers, Derek. Keep that in mind. I mean, you wouldn't have gotten out of the Brandon Myers deal if you didn't give him a 1 year contract.
Well, I don't even really, you know, because I'm not in the same camp as everybody else with Brandon Myers, because I think the guy caught about 50 passes. That's what the Giants tight ends do. So I think that they should try to at least get the people in, depending on, no matter what position, a 1 year with another year option. They should try to work those contracts out to give themselves some leeway. If you do well the first year, we at least have an option to renegotiate your salary or to do something else. These 1 year contracts doesn't seem to give the team chemistry for someone. I know it's a salary cap thing, but it seems like they could figure out somehow to give at least an option year so they could at least try to negotiate a better contract.
Well, keep in mind, with Brandon Myers' contract, we talk about it as a one-year deal, but technically it wasn't a one-year deal. There was four more years on the contract, but you had the flexibility to get out of it because it was not guaranteed. So, you know, they have worked out similar circumstances in the past, Derek, and I completely understand where you're coming from. But you know what? You look at the NFL landscape, Derek, and we see teams with rookies come and go, veterans come and go, and they find a way to make it work. So, you know, it's not as if what the Giants are doing with maybe having a game of musical chairs or a revolving door at one position where other teams haven't dealt with certain similar circumstances and they flourish. So, you know, I don't necessarily think it's a contractual thing. I just think it's a matter of the Giants want to be careful and they don't want to get themselves at a contract that's then going to force them to have to sacrifice other positional players. You look back, Martellus Bennett would have been a great guy to keep around. I think in his first year, he was extremely productive. And remember, he was backing up Jason Witten. So you didn't really know what you were going to get out of Martellus Bennett. And in hindsight, under those circumstances, Derek, you're right. You wish you had Martellus Bennett under a three-year deal because he probably wouldn't cost a whole lot for a three-year deal. And then you would have had that position solidified for at least two more years. And then you would have at least tried to explore other options. It's really a catch-22. You don't want to lock up a guy long-term who's not proven, but then what happens if he blossoms in year number one? You want to have some insurance so that you don't have to then open up the piggy bank to get him. But, you know, there's other teams that have had to deal with certain circumstances like that, and they find a way to get over the hump. So, you know, I don't want to say that the Giants are unique compared to any other team where we see a lot of other teams have to deal with this.
Yeah. All right, my last thing here is that I'm going to talk about, because you said you want to talk about some of these division tight ends. It's clearly that we're last in the division or tight end position. With Dallas, with Witten, and they brought another guy in last year, I think.
Gavin Escobar, who they drafted in round two, who they're expecting to develop. They also have James Hanna, who is a veteran tight end.
Yeah, and I remember James Hanna in the combine, and he did look, you know, athletic.
Correct.
And so,
I would put it. I think it's fair to say, Derek, and I'll let you continue to interrupt. The bottom line is the Giants have the most questions at that position, whereas Dallas, Philadelphia, and Washington, there's at least one guy on that roster that you could say with confidence he's going to go out there and give you something. Even Jordan Reed, who is young, and he was a rookie last year, and I understand he dealt with concussions, there was enough games on his plate last year that you could say, okay, Jordan Reed comes back healthy, Washington knows what it's going to get out of him, and Philadelphia has a few young tight ends, but you at least know what you're going to get out of them. The Giants, a lot of question marks.
Yeah. Jordan Reed looks like a beast. He's going to be good. Also, I like the way the first year of Zach Ertz and
Brent Celek.
So,
yeah, the two of them.
Yeah. But does the Washington still have Fred, what's his last name?
Fred Davis. No, Fred Davis Fred is Davis. No longer on the team. They parted ways. Behind okay. Reed, they have two guys who you're probably familiar with because we've seen the Redskins time and time again. That's Niles Paul and Logan Paulson, who are, you know, journeyman tight ends, but they have made some big catches over the last few seasons. So they have some depth even behind a guy like Jordan Reed.
All right. Well, thanks, Les. One last thing. What do you consider a tight end on the Giants to having a successful season? What's the numbers? And I'll talk to you maybe tomorrow, whenever you're in.
I'm in tomorrow, Derek, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. You know, I'm not a big numbers guy, and I know a lot of people throw out questions, you know, what do you expect from Odell Beckham Jr. out of year number one? And you can look at what some other young wideouts have done over the course of the NFL seasons, or you can look at what other rookie Giants wide receivers have done, and sometimes it takes some time for a Giants rookie to blossom. With respect to the tight end position, you know, it's a good question, and Derek, I think you pretty much answered your own question. You look at what Brandon Myers did, and it's funny. When you look at his numbers, and let me bring up Brandon Myers' numbers from last season. The reason why a lot of people are critical of Brandon Myers is because you and I have watched each and every game, and you're taking into consideration more than just the numbers. But if we're to go based on the numbers, Brandon Myers last season, he put up 47 receptions in 16 games. He had 522 receiving yards, and he had four touchdowns. Now, the touchdowns really came in bunches, more so late in the season than early, but that's sometimes the nature of the beast. If you look at Martellus Bennett's numbers, you know, his came in bunches as well. He also had to deal with a knee injury, so that impacted his development as well. What I'm going to do is I'm going to bring up Martellus Bennett's numbers. I don't know everybody's numbers off the course of my head. Let's see what Martellus Bennett did the year before Brandon Myers, just to get a trend going. To generalize, more so than numbers, and I know I'm giving you the typical tight end answer, but I think if you can get 50 receptions out of your tight end, that's not bad. And you get about 5 or 6 touchdowns, but you know, I don't even think you need to gauge the value of a tight end based on the touchdowns. I think you can really determine how effective your tight end is if he's a guy that's getting consistent receptions, meaning if you're getting about 4 to 5 catches from your tight end every game and he is a consistent part of your offense, what that means is if I'm a defensive coordinator going up against the Giants, I at least need to say to myself, hey, this guy, he's good for 4 to 5 catches every game, whether it be over the middle, on the sideline, you name it. Who cares where he's catching the football? The bottom line is he's a threat, he's making receptions, and he's coming through with those catches. So that means that I can't take my linebacker, I can't take maybe my extra safety and double team another wide receiver or another running back. I need to pay attention to him. So if I'm getting that out of my tight end, that to me is a good, solid tight end. If that's what I want out of my tight end. 4 to 5 catches every game, maybe 6 to 7 targets. And I think in this Ben McAdoo offense, there's going to be a number of players, whether they be receivers, running backs, or tight ends, you're going to see them get that many targets every game. Now, I don't think Eli is going to look to Victor Cruz 15 to 20 times a game, and then everybody else is going to hope and keep their fingers crossed, hey, maybe I'll get a catch here or there. I think Eli is going to look this way. He's going to look that way. He's going to look down the middle, over the top, you name it, right, left. And there's going to be a number of players that are going to get X amount of targets. If you look at Green Bay, and I know we're talking about a different quarterback who brings some different characteristics to the table, but if you look at how the targets were carried out in the Packers situation last year, they spread the wealth. I don't want to get too off topic here because I know I was getting into a variety of things. Martellus Bennett, 2012. Also played 16 games like Brandon Myers. He had 55 receptions, so he had 8 more receptions than Brandon Myers. He had 626 receiving yards, so he had less than just about 100, I should say. 100 more receiving yards than Brandon Myers. And then the touchdowns, Bennett had 5, Brandon Myers had 4. So if you played the numbers game, let's say you didn't watch any of the Giants tight ends perform over the last 2 years. If you look at Brandon Myers' numbers, you look at Martellus Bennett's numbers, they each played 16 games. Those numbers are relatively identical. Martellus Bennett, made a few more big catches, and he had one extra touchdown. But the receptions, eight receptions, we're going to sit here and get all passionate over eight receptions. So they're fairly even. But what separates the two? Martellus Bennett was a consistent blocker. And Martellus Bennett, you could maybe make the argument, well, I shouldn't say maybe, he was more of a threat. If you're a defensive coordinator, you could not leave Martellus Bennett open. Defensive coordinators may have gone about their business with Brandon Myers a little bit different because they knew he wasn't such a focal point of the offense. But outside of that, numbers were pretty much the same. So if you take those numbers over the last 2 years, and to get back to Derek's question, you say, from a numbers standpoint, what does Adrian Robinson, Daniel Fells, Kellen Davis need to do to be a productive tight end? It's pretty much the law of averages. You get 50 receptions, you get about 500 receiving yards, you get four touchdowns. That's fine. But what I want to see is I want to see the targets consistent, and I want to see the receptions consistent. So then what you're doing is you're showing a defensive coordinator, hey, we consider our tight end to be a big focal point. That's what it comes down to. Before I get back to more of your phone calls, I know the tweets are just coming in time and time again, and I will sit here and address as many as I can. I want to go to the target distribution for the Green Bay Packers last season. Let's see how the targets were distributed across the board. And then that could potentially give us a better gauge of how Eli Manning is going to look to spread the wealth. So let's see here, bringing up the Packers stats from last season, assuming that this chart that I have up actually has the targets. Okay, Jordy Nelson led the way with 126 targets. James Jones had 93. Jared Boykin, 82. Randall Cobb, now Cobb missed a handful of games because he was hurt, 46. Corliss, the tight end, was at 54. Finley, 34. Eddie Lacy, the running back, had 44. I just named you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys, including Finley, who had 35 targets apiece. And if a number of those guys stayed healthy, such as Finley and Cobb, and Corliss played more games, I bet you their targets would be even higher. So to get back to my point, this is going to be an offense, whether it be the tight ends, whether it be the wide receivers, where Eli Manning is going to try to really spread the wealth here. And I think that's going to bode well for the offense. And for those of you saying that Kevin Gilbride's offense was too predictable, I don't think we're going to see that. Because if Eli Manning is looking at different angles of the field and different players, it's going to make it very difficult for a defensive coordinator to come in against the Giants and say, hey, we take this guy out of the equation, it's going to wreak havoc for this offense. No, because Eli Manning is not going to be dependent on one player in particular. All right, let's try to go to a couple of tweets here before we get back to the lines. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow with you here on this Monday morning edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. You can also follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Jay Smith at J-U-Blue-1, spelled B-L-U, Blue. With tight end being such a concern, any movement on the Finley front, reports say he's cleared. Are the Giants interested? The Giants have looked at some other tight ends. There's a possibility that they have been in contact with JerMichael Finley, and they're waiting to see perhaps how healthy he is come the start of training camp. I have not seen anything in particular, anything definitive to tie JerMichael Finley to the Giants. Anything you're reading is what I'm seeing, and it would be purely speculative at this point. But I get back to what I've brought up before with respect to JerMichael Finley. And I believe there was another comment on the Finley side of things. Yes, Jay Smith wrote in another tweet, we need a punch at tight end. Tight ends on the roster will not get it done. Finley will come cheap, and he knows how. Finley coming cheap, can't necessarily debate that. It's not as if a number of teams are banging down his door because of the health concerns. So, yes, financially, they probably could fit him into the game plan. But remember, he's got to learn this offense, and you also want to make sure that there's the durability factor. If JerMichael Finley gets clearance for training camp, hey, that's fine. But you're going to tell me JerMichael Finley still doesn't have any question marks? JerMichael Finley still has as many question marks as Adrian Robinson when it comes to health, as Larry Donnell when it comes to health. Players who have dealt with prior injuries. And Finley is a serious nature we're talking about. We're talking about a neck injury. David Wilson, neck injury. Mathias Kiwanuka's dealt with a neck injury. How many more guys do you want on this team that a bad hit here or there could put them in a very bad position? You know what the goal for the Giants right now is? How about a healthy tight end? How about that? That's what the goal is. The majority of you calling for them to bring in JerMichael Finley, I don't think you're looking at the health perspective. Players like Adrian Robertson, Larry Donnell, they have not been able to stay healthy. They have not been out on the field. So you bring in JerMichael Finley, let's say hypothetically, to add more depth. If he can't get out there, what good is it keeping him on the roster? And by him being in camp, all you're going to do is take away reps from somebody else who could truly contribute on this team. You know, those are the other factors that teams such as the Giants are going to take into consideration. And the reason why I bring this up, Danny Langsdorf, the QB coach, when he addressed the media at the end of minicamp, there were people questioning, you know, why did they get rid of Josh Freeman? What's going on with Ryan Nassib, Curtis Painter? And one of the first thing Langsdorf threw out, he said, number in terms of how many quarterbacks you have on the roster, 3 is great, 2 is ideal. Why? Because you know the distribution of reps is going to be perfect. There's going to be at a point where you can truly gauge the development of a quarterback. When they had 4 or 5 quarterbacks in camp at one point, and they did, they had Rusty Smith, the former tight end, and there were a number of guys the Giants brought in when Eli Manning was dealing with his offseason surgery and his rehab. No one knew when Eli Manning was going to come back. It was hard for them to evaluate. So I relate that to the tight end situation. What good is it to have 6, 7, 8 tight ends in camp? You really think that these guys are going to get the same amount of reps? You're not going to have enough time. I would rather, if I'm a coach, if I'm an organization, I'd rather have 4 in camp who you are going to be able to drill into the ground and put through so many different game situations where you're going to get a perfect idea, is he a good fit for your team or he's not, versus having 7 or 8 guys in camp and you just rotate them and you get 2 reps here, 2 reps there, and then you say, all right, well, we saw a flash out of this guy, we saw a flash out of this guy, this guy did absolutely nothing, this guy was falling asleep on the sideline and drinking too much water and running to the bathroom every 5 seconds. I mean, come on. What good is that for the benefit of your team? I understand there's the itch, there's the urge to bring in a name. And it seems as if, and I don't want to generalize, a number of you, you get caught up in that name game. But then I bring to the table Jake Ballard, Kevin Boss, even Martellus Bennett. These guys were not necessarily names, and they were very productive within the Giants system. And you look at a number of Packers in the past, who I threw out earlier in the program, that were not names, and they were productive. Let's see what we get out of some of these guys in training camp and preseason. We're all going based on the resume, based on the paper argument. Training camp and preseason is going to show us a lot. 201-939-4513, the telephone number. Let's go to Shakes out in Baltimore. Shakes, what's happening?
What's going on, man?
I'm doing all right, Shakes. How about yourself?
I'm all right, man. I'm good, man. My birthday week. I'm
very nice. Well, happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's actually Wednesday, but...
All right, well, an early birthday, but you called it your birthday week, so I'm assuming it's going to be a big celebration. Well, listen, if there's anybody that knows how to party, Shakes, you know how to do it. You know how to do it right. I'm not going to debate that.
It's going to be a festival.
There we go. I like that. A festival. See, you got to monopolize the time and take advantage. There you go.
No doubt. I wanted to speak on these tight ends.
Sure. What you got?
I've been speaking on them for a while now. So, what I'm going to do is I'm not going to be negative on it because I kind of like this kid Grumble, and I know I said it before. I don't know if you actually heard it, but I like this kid Grumble. I like the toughness. I like the grit, you know, the hard nose. To me, if he steps up and takes that spot, we can show a lot of physicality with this guy. You know, and I don't think that he's going to take the first string. I don't think they're going to do that. But I think that he will make this 53-man roster.
Well, I mean, he has as good of a chance as anybody else, and the size factor, the physicality factor is there. And from an investment standpoint, considering he's undrafted, you know, the Giants can take a chance with him because it's not as if he's going to eat up so much in salary cap space, but it really comes down to how well will he transition to this offense. Because keep this in mind, Shakes, unlike some of the other tight ends, and a number of them are unproven, even a guy like Donnell and Robinson, they have at least a year of being around an NFL team, knowing what practice is like, knowing what a coaching staff calls upon them for. Whereas Grimble, he's the only new kid on the block. We'll see whether or not he can get ahead of them on the depth chart.
Yeah, I think that Adrian Robinson is going to step up. I'm liking what I'm hearing from him in the media. I like what he's saying. And I like how, you know, he's saying he's more in the classroom and it's showing in on the field from the OTA. So I like that aspect of it. But here's this one thing that I do not like. And it's not Adrian Robinson, it's Larry Doneau. I do not like Larry Doneau. I don't know why John Folks or John coaches are hiring him, because I don't see anything from him. I mean, he's just a body out there to me.
Well, he hasn't had a lot of time to prove himself, to keep in mind. Last year was only his first year on the team. Keep that in mind,
yeah.
Chase. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what he did to irritate.
I've seen a lot of him in week one that I shouldn't had.
Well, listen, there were some mental lapses on the part of Larry Doneau. Don't get me wrong. I believe it was the Eagles game, if I'm correct, where he ran behind the end zone and went out of play and then came back in. I mean, there are some things that right now you sit back and you laugh at. It's comical. So, you know, that's what happens when you have a young player, and that's why I throw that interrelation with Grimble. I'm not saying Grimble's going to make those mistakes, but when you have a young guy shakes, as you know, sometimes as much as they are athletic and they show a lot of potential, there's also those type of situations where you're left scratching your head and you're like, oh, my goodness, what's going on here?
Yeah, definitely.
And that was the one thing that stands out to me about Doneau. And listen, we could sit here and have a lot of good laughs over last season. I mean, I know it's painful for a lot of Giants fans, but there were some comical situations.
Yeah, but we can sit back and laugh now.
Correct, exactly. You can laugh now. Very true. Yeah.
Okay. And last thing I wanted to speak on is this quarterback situation, because I spoke on it on the Shakedown, and I feel that it's a conspiracy. I feel like it's a conspiracy. And here's what I mean by that, okay? With Freeman, they said that he wasn't picking up the offense quick enough or something like that. Maybe just to pick up the playbook or something like that. But it was only a weekend. How much of the playbook do you really expect him to pick up in a week? I mean, you just signed a guy last week, and then he has 1 week in OTAs or whatever, and then he's gone. And that's because Eli, you know, they didn't expect Eli to come back that fast. They didn't expect, what's the other guy, Curtis Painter, to actually be able
correct.
To practice.
He had off-season knee surgery, and Eli had the ankle, so there were two quarterbacks down, and that's why they were bringing in a lot of QBs. It was more insurance. I don't know deep down inside if they were envisioning any of the players that they brought in, Shakes, to truly make this roster. I'm not saying that they just brought in bodies for the sake of bringing in bodies, but when you say conspiracy theory, I'm a little confused. Where are you going?
Okay, and I'm going to get to that point. That's what I was getting to, was, okay, here's the thing. So, yeah, basically we want two quarterbacks on this roster, right?
I think that would be the ideal circumstance.
That's the general idea.
Correct, because why should you sacrifice another position where, knock on wood, it's unlikely you're going to have to turn to a third quarterback?
Got you. Right. Okay. So basically we are expecting this guy Nassib to step up and take this spot, or we're going to have to keep a third quarterback because we're not getting rid of Nassib, right?
Because
we traded up last year and all that in the fourth round for him.
I would say there's a level of patience with Ryan Nassib. I think that's a fair assumption and assessment that you just threw out. Does that mean that they're going to hand him everything? No, but I think they're going to do everything they can to give him additional reps, get a lot of time during the preseason to at least get rid of any concerns they may have here within the organization that he's not ready to take on the backup job. So I think, yes, the ultimate goal or the perfect ideal vision for the roster would be Manning number one, Nassib number two, and then you use depth elsewhere and not keep three quarterbacks on the 53.
Yeah, and my thing is, you know, why not keep a Freeman in there just for competition? Plus, I mean, that's why I think it's a conspiracy, because I think that they was kind of scared that Freeman would show much more than Nassib would in preseason and all that whatnot. And Giant fans would be like, you know, well, we're going to have to keep Freeman. So then you're going to have to keep three quarterbacks because you're not getting rid of Nash.
Well, Shakes, I don't know if the rationale is we're worried about what the fan base is thinking. And I'm not trying to downgrade you and the rest of the fan base. Don't misinterpret the words. But I don't think that in deep down behind closed doors they're saying, oh, my God, if Freeman wows us, how are we going to sell this to the fan base? I think the Giants are of the mindset if Freeman takes advantage of his opportunities, it would have been a great signing. And you know what? Our goal is at the end of the day, as any other team, we got to keep the best 53. So, listen, ideally you'd like to keep Nassib in the mix because, as you mentioned, he's still young. He's on a rookie contract, and perhaps he could be a future QB. But if Eli's still going to hang around, you can't worry about Ryan Nassib being the quarterback of the future 6 or 7 years from now. You got to worry about who's going to contribute year one right now. And if Nassib can't do that, then I would say you part ways with him.
And that's my thing. You know, if we got to depend on a backup quarterback anytime in this season, we haven't done it in Eli's whole career. But if we did, we go into Nassib, and what we seeing from Nassib in OTAs is pretty scary right now.
Well,
so it's
once
either
again,
do or die.
Well, what is scary about it? I mean, he's had a number of reps. I think, listen, has he blown everybody out of the park?
Many interceptions.
Well, but you can't judge. Yeah, but
you can't
judge interceptions in camp and OTAs. I mean, some guys are taking their fair share of chances, Shakes. And remember, you know, the pads are not on. The wide receivers can't push off the corners to get an air. I mean, that you're really – listen, I respect your homework, and I understand where you're coming from, but to sit here and say Nassib's throwing too many INTs during camp and mini camp, I mean, that to me is too much of a stretch at this point.
Okay, all right. It's just it's alarming, I'm telling you. And you know how it is when I'm alone.
I hear you. And you never want your quarterback to throw interceptions, but I think all of the quarterbacks are taking their fair share of chances, especially down the field. And, you know, they want to show arm strength. Yes, decision-making is a part of the evaluation in OTAs and minicamp. But considering you have very limited contact and you don't get touchy-feely between the offense and defense, I don't know if it's fair to say, oh, well, he threw 5 picks in practice today and this is going to kill his development. Let's see what happens during the preseason. If during the preseason, Shakes, the INTs are up, let's revisit this conversation and I'll give you – you're due from that standpoint.
Gotcha. All right, man. Thanks. Last thing. I'm sorry. But the shakedown, we got Kelsey Crowe's coming in tomorrow.
Nice. Look at this. I mean, what do you got, a team of producers now booking guests? I'm impressed. This is something. Working the contacts. Wow.
Man,
look at this.
We doing big things over there, man.
Hey, that's good to hear, Shakes. Well, listen,
right,
we'll catch up over the rest of the week. Appreciate the phone call.
No problem, man.
All right, Shakes in Maryland. Let's get back to the lines. I know a number of you are holding. We got Steve in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, what's happening, Lance?
Happy
Monday morning to you, buddy.
Same to you. A happy Monday. What's on the mind this morning?
It's always hard to follow my man, Shakes. But while we're on Shakes, I just had to say I kind of buy his notion to it. I see his way of thinking behind the Josh Freeman cutting. I could see how he would, you know, he could turn out to look better than Nassib or Payne, and how that could be a conflict. I'm not sure why we brought it in, but I'm pretty sure he's better than both those guys. So,
Freeman is a polished quarterback, Steve. I would not debate you there, and I think it would have been interesting to see how he truly would have developed. Steve, I'm getting some feedback. If you could lower, I don't know if you're still listening on the app or on the computer, but if you could just turn that down while you're on the phone, because I'm getting feedback. But I agree with you. It would have been nice to see what Freeman has to offer, and then you would have said, wow, Eli Manning and Freeman on the same team. You have two quarterbacks that have starting experience. Yes, it would have been a nice luxury to have, but I think the Giants take into consideration Eli Manning's durability, and you can never take that for granted in any circumstances in the NFL, because you never know what could happen with any quarterback, and they want more depth at other positions. Remember, outside of last season, 2007 was the last year they held on to three quarterbacks. So this is not a common practice. It was a unique circumstance because you had a rookie quarterback who they felt was not ready to take the number two job. Now you've got Nassib with some more experience under his belt, and they hope that he'll show he could be the number two, and then there's no need to have a third quarterback.
I got you. Well, listen, Lance, you know, I have to kind of disagree with your notion about McAdoo, having a past history of developing tight ends. That's a stretch, man. Come on, I mean, Crabtree.
But how is that a stretch, though?
That's a stretch.
Well, because Steve, you're looking, at the numbers, though. I agree. Crabtree and Corliss, the receptions are not there. But
Who are they? Come on, I don't even know these guys.
Well, if you're a Packers fan, I guarantee you know them. If you're a Bears fan, if you're familiar with the NFC North, come on, Steve. You know those guys.
Listen, you know, quietly, I have a man crush on Aaron Rodgers. He's actually one of my favorite quarterbacks. I watch Green Bay games. I've never really, other than Jermichael Finley, which I am totally against picking him up. Okay, I know all these guys want to see us, you know, make this, you know, big name trade for tight end, but you know, and I'll obviously be alone, but I'm just not buying the whole thing. I like Mike Pope better as a tight end coach, but that's really what I wanted to make, the point I wanted to make. You know, last thing we need is another player on our roster who has a good chance of being hurt,
especially
with his type of injury.
Correct.
So I also disagree with the person who said, saying that, you know, Jerry Reese doesn't care about the linebackers or the tight end is not concerned. That's ridiculous. You would never hear a notion like that even come out of his mouth. What he's been saying is he's expecting big things. He has confidence in the tight ends we have on the roster, and that's exactly why we're not making a wholesale move.
Here's the other thing, Steve, and I agree with you. I think that's a fair assessment of where Jerry Reese is coming from. He's invested in a lot of these guys. The coaching staff seems to see some potential in them. They want to see how things play out. But if you're going to claim that Jerry Reese didn't do justice with the tight end position, somebody's got to throw out a tight end on the free agent market this offseason that the Giants dropped the ball with. It was not a great market for that position this offseason.
I agree with you, Tony. You know, and the thing is, you know, to take it a step further, I mean, other than the fact that we're, you know, he's expecting, you know, Adrian Robinson to step up. I mean, just if people would just stop and think, after we, you know, didn't bring Bennett back last year, and we went ahead and got Brandon Myers and he had 79 receptions. I was halfway excited about the guy. I didn't know much about him other than 79 receptions, but it showed me that we actually did try to make a move. And I mean, I don't think he's comparable to Bennett, just, you know, even with the numbers, just because of Bennett, you know, his willingness to block and the size. And he's like you already said, he was just more of a threat. But it did show me that we actually did value the tight end. But what failed us was the offensive line, the block, and we just weren't able to get a production out of the position last year. And that goes to my next point. I know you kind of said you expect Eli to be able to, you know, to be looking around the field and all that. And I actually don't. I think it's going to be more scripted as to who we go through, because he's going to have a shorter step drop, and I think he's going to have one or two reads and make sure see who's open and in the right position. But I don't think it's going to be more of the wide open type thing. And I mean, I want to hear your opinion, because I kind of feel like, you know, he's going to know who he's going to do, maybe have one or two checks, you know, reads where he's going to go. But I don't really see us, you know, spending a lot of time surveying the field. I hope to see the ball being spread out, but, you know, more about design as opposed to just kind of winging it. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that there will be certain plays by design, absolutely. I think they're going to utilize certain receivers out of the screen game to try to use their speed up the field. And he's going to have certain plays where, obviously, like he has now, where there's one guy who's the number one option, the number two option, and so forth. But to say that Eli's not going to take his fair share of chances down the field like in the old offense, I mean, I think there's going to be balance. They're going to look to get guys down the field. This is not just going to be all of a sudden an offense where, you know, Manning drops back two steps and then he's throwing 5 yards and then hoping that they get 10-yard gain off the run. They're going to try to air it out as well. So under those circumstances, he's going to have some time to survey the field. But I think that it's not just going to be let Victor Cruz run vertical and throw it deep and just have Victor jump up and make the catch. I agree. There's going to be more of where you have guys run certain routes and Eli is going to make sure that, hey, can I get Victor on the curl? Can I get Victor on the slant? Can I get so forth on the slant or the curl? Yes, but I think it's going to be a balance between both. I don't think it's going to be all scripted. They're going to still look to get their chances down the field as well. And you'd be foolish if you didn't, because you have a number of wide receivers on this team that have proven that they can get down the field. Why not take advantage of those opportunities?
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree with that, Lance. You know, I mean, I'm sure there'll be more design plays to go down the field, but I just don't think it'll kind of be like, you know, kind of winging it as far as moving it down the field. I just have this idea from what I'm hearing from McAdoo and the players. Yeah, this is going to be a little bit more methodical. We'll pick and choose when we decide to go downfield as opposed to just, you know, hoping that somebody is downfield on each play. I think Eli is going to be focused on getting the ball out quicker and hopefully spreading around to the playmakers. So, you know, that's really all I have for today. But, I encourage our Giant fans to just be patient and just, you know, see what, you know, new wrinkles we have and scheme-wise. And I think the scheme along with the offensive line blocking is going to play a big part in whether we have, productivity out of the tight end position. But I haven't gone into any year and felt like, oh, well, we don't care about tight end. Only thing I could really begin to say that is obviously it's about the linebacker position. And, I mean, you know, there was different reasons why we didn't get different linebackers in the past. But anyway, I look forward to, a great season. And thanks for taking my call, buddy.
You got it, Steve. Appreciate the phone call. And piggybacking off of Steve's last point about how the offensive line should help the productivity out of the tight end. You look at last season, and not to sit here and defend Brandon Myers, but Myers had to stay down on the line more so than probably the Giants even anticipated because of some of the struggles by the offensive linemen. This season, if the five offensive linemen can get it done and the running back helps, then the tight end can run more routes. So therefore, maybe you could see some additional productivity out of the tight end, no matter what type of baggage they bring to the table. Now, Derek just threw out to me on Twitter, at Dirty Giants 2000, Derek in the ATL, I threw out the question about what other tight end on the free agent market could the Giants go after. He threw out Owen Daniels, who wound up signing a one-year deal with the Baltimore Ravens. But Daniels, remember, came off an injury. Owen Daniels, a very good tight end with the Houston Texans. But he got hurt last season and then missed the duration of the season. So I think that the Giants said to themselves, do we want to bring in a guy that, yes, has a track record, but also is coming off an injury? See, the problem with the Giants at the tight end position is they've had a number of guys here that have gotten hurt. Why do you want to bring in somebody who's coming off an injury? Is he going to be expensive? You can make the argument, Owen Daniels, I know that the Ravens didn't give him a big deal, but he's put up enough over the course of his career where he warrants a nice contract. But I think that the injury shied away. So that you at least need to take into consideration. Daniels is a good suggestion, but there's the injury situation. Avery at TQ Man AF says Crabtree and Corliss, good tight ends, not great, efficient tight ends. Who said the Giants need great tight ends? And I'm not going to say that Green Bay had great tight ends, but you get efficient tight ends, that's all you need in the system. And that was getting to the point where Steve was saying that you shouldn't give Ben McAdoo credit for developing tight ends. I disagree with that. Once again, I'm not saying Crabtree and Corliss, and I've looked over the numbers. The numbers don't look like much of anything, but if you look at how they were used in the scheme, they were, as Avery just mentioned on Twitter, efficient tight ends. Right, let's take a look at some more tweets before we get back to the lines. Avery also wrote in his opinion, he thinks, like many of you, they got rid of Josh Freeman too fast. PZO at PZO Mac, Finley won't come cheap. He can take a $10 million insurance policy out, so why play if he can't make that over the next 3 to 5 years? Well, insurance is certainly something to take into consideration, but it really comes down to whether a guy has the desire to play. And that's another thing that JerMichael Finley hasn't yet answered. He can be medically cleared, but it's one thing if the guy wants to also get out there and play, knowing that one more hit could put him in a precarious situation for the rest of his life. Neck injuries are serious. This is not something that you can take lightly. Avery also weighing in on Finley. Finley, too many question marks. That wasn't an injury like Wilson. It was more serious. We have enough players with health issues. That's why with Owen Daniels, I threw out, maybe he doesn't have the track record of Finley with the injury bug, but it's coming off an injury. Why do you want to bring in another guy that's hurt? Jay Smith at J-U Blue 1, B-L-U, spelling blue. We would probably love to have Myers now. McAdoo's system would fit him as a receiver. Blocking was his Achilles. No argument there. Blocking was something that he did struggle with, and probably in this McAdoo system, the tight ends, don't assume that the tight ends are not going to block in this system. Let's not assume that. But I think that they're utilized more in the receiving game than in the blocking game. I will give you that.
AC Sibeli at AC Sibeli 1 threw out a similar question that I received on the lines. I believe it was AJ in South Carolina. How many tight ends do you think make the team and which tight ends? And I'll rehash that in case you're just joining us. I think three tight ends make the roster. They have five right now. I think three because you can make the point you have some fullbacks, you have some running backs, and you're probably going to utilize a lot of wide receiver sets where you may have three, four wide receivers on the field. So you may not utilize the tight end as much as often as your other offenses that you've had in the past. So, therefore, I don't know if there's need there. In terms of the three, right now, and this is only going with a small sample size of what you see out of OTA's minicamp and just potential, I think the Giants would lean towards the two veterans, Kellen Davis and Daniel Fells, and Adrian Robinson. And I was talking about this with Shakes earlier. I think I'm not going to go out on a limb and say Adrian Robinson is going to have a tremendous year where he is going to quiet all the skeptics. There's going to be his breakout campaign. But I think Adrian Robinson is going to be productive this season. I think that the McAdoo system is going to be a good fit for him, and I think he's going to be healthy for once. And those two things combined are going to be good signs for Adrian Robinson. I think we're going to see some flashes here in the preseason and training camp. Hasn't had enough opportunity to even show those flashes. So that would be a guy that I would lean toward. Larry Donnell, mental lapses and the health factor. Let's see him overcome that. And then when you look at some of the other tight ends, Grimble, and Grimble has a lot of upside, a lot of potential, but I'm just nervous about a young guy really coming in, digesting the offense, and showing the coaching staff enough where they'd be willing to throw him out there if they go to double tight end sets. Because let's assume this. You keep three tight ends. You're probably going to use two of them more so than were utilized in any other game. If you have two tight ends as an element of your offense, you want to make sure those two tight ends are going to go out there, they're going to know the playbook. So that's why I would say Fells and Davis have a good opportunity to make this team. Because you feel in confidence, hey, we go to two tight ends, those guys will be able to go out there and carry out the offense. And then you keep Adrian Robinson, who has some experience. Grimble, Donnell, the experience factor, could come back to haunt them. 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. We've got Sean in Maine. Sean, welcome to the program. What you got?
Good morning, John. How you doing?
Good morning. It's Lance, actually. But good to hear from you, Sean. What you got?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not a problem.
Voice sounds familiar. Anyway,
what you got?
I wanted to jump right into the tight ends. It seems to be the topic of the day. It actually probably been the topic for quite some time since we didn't, you know, make any big splash for tight ends. I think there's a lot of big splash to be made during the offseason. Tight end in the draft, but I think we definitely got the cream of the crop there. But as far as Trinity goes, I would say if we could bring him in for, you know, a buck in a year contract, I would be all for it. No disrespect to the guy, great player. I know he's come off a couple injuries, and my personal opinion, if McAdoo's not banging the counter and telling everybody we need to bring this guy in, I don't see any reason why we should. Other than for depth, that would be nice. I think what we have in-house, Robinson, like you just said a moment ago, is going to be more than productive, very serviceable. And, I mean, he's a young, talented kid that, you know, has had some injuries himself and just hasn't had a shot.
And that's why I think it's important to get this group as many reps in training camp as humanly possible. If you bring in another tight end, it's another body, keep in mind, Sean, that's then going to take reps away from the guys that you truly want to have an opportunity to evaluate.
I agree 100%. I think when, you know, the coaches looked at all what they had on paper, they knew what they had, you know. There was probably a very good reason why they didn't jump at anybody real quick in the draft. They brought, you know, some other bodies in to create competition, and that's the best thing they can do, and that's what's going to drive, you know, Robinson and maybe Donnell if he can stay healthy.
Well, that's the key, the opportunity and the health factor. Opportunity is there, all of them, vets, young guys, you name it, guys that just walked into the door. And then you have the health factor, and Robinson and Donnell have had opportunities even last season. But if you're on the sideline,
you're not doing yourself any good because the coaching staff is not going to put you on the field if they don't know what to expect from you when you get out there. So if they could stay healthy, I think we could truly see what type of development we could get out of this group.
Most definitely, I agree, and I think we're gonna get good production out of them with this system. This system kind of feeds right into opportunities for both of them, I think, as well as Davis. I think Davis is probably going to be pretty solid if he can get out there and definitely block. And the other concern I think someone brought up was with quarterback and with Ryan as the backup. And, you know, everything I've heard about Ryan over the last 2 years has been accuracy. The great thing about accuracy is it can be taught. He's also going through his second system in 2 years, so there's probably going to be some accuracy problems because he doesn't always know probably exactly where the ball's going. So once he gets that down, and once he gets some games underneath him, I think we're going to see a different quarterback there as well.
Well, the point that you brought up, and you hit it right on the nose, that even though Ryan Nassib was here last season, you need to take into consideration, you're right, he's learning a new offense. So he's really starting all over again. It's like another rookie year. The positive is, though, Sean, it's a similar system to what he ran at Syracuse, more so than Gilbride's system. So I think that will help him. And the fact that he's had many more reps than Painter and Manning, because remember, when those two players were sidelined because of surgeries, Nassib was the only quarterback here leading the pack, working with the number one team. So, you know, right now, there's a lot of things that are adding up in favor of Ryan Nassib, but you can't lose sight of the fact, you're right, it's a new offense for him all over again, and we've seen quarterbacks who are polished vets that have changed their offenses, changed their coordinators. Alex Smith is the guy that I always reference because it took him X amount of years in San Francisco till he finally broke out and then got a nice deal from Kansas City and is an established starter. Prior to that, the Niners were having a revolving door of offensive coordinators and offenses, and that doesn't help a quarterback.
No, definitely does not help a quarterback at all. And, you know, like you said and you brought up, the reps that Ryan's been getting through OTAs and everything is really going to make a difference for him because accuracy has a lot to do with confidence, too. You know, confidence in your abilities, confidence in the system, confidence in knowing where people are going to be. And I think, you know, if he gets those reps, which he really wasn't getting last year, I think that's going to definitely give him a leg up. I think we're going to see a lot of different things from this preseason than we did last year.
Absolutely, and the way that the offensive line has performed will help him out too. And Sean, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in this morning. 201-939-4513. If you look back at the film from last year's preseason, Nassib had limited opportunities, but the opportunities that he got in there, remember, you know, he was with the fourth, fifth string offensive lineman, and they were not giving him any opportunities to throw the ball down the field. This year, he's going to get in with more experienced offensive linemen that are healthy, and that should help the Giants really evaluate his decision-making. Last year, yes, you could argue he had some opportunities, but very limited. How can you evaluate him when he was dropping back and all of a sudden 17 defensive tackles were in his vicinity and in his face? You go back to the Jets game. I remember the Steelers game he was in late, and it was a sack party for Pittsburgh. So you at least need to use that as part of the conversation when you evaluate Ryan Nassib. Let's head back to the lines, and we go to Drew in Virginia. Drew, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Good morning, man. Thanks
morning to you, Drew. What's happening? Not a problem. What you got?
Hey, you know, just listening to the show, man, I got a couple of comments to make, man. I want to go back to, I think it was Derek was talking about Jerry Reese and his one-year contracts. It does seem, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it does seem that Jerry, you know, I've always looked at Jerry's done fairly good, and I say fairly because we have had a number of busts. But, you know, it seems to me, and the one issue that I have, it just seems to me that Jerry is trying to master the one-year deal contracts. And I think sometimes, you know, you can't always get everything on the cheap, and sometimes you have to pay.
Well, but if you take the tight end position, is there a player, Drew, in particular that you felt that he should have went after, that he didn't, and it should have been a multi-year deal? Is that where you're getting at? Or you feel guys like Martellus Bennett should have been given long-term contracts so that they weren't put in this position?
Looking at where we at right now, first and foremost, okay, and being that we're talking about the tight ends, first and foremost, okay, you can count me as one of the people who aren't, who isn't looking for the big name. And actually, I will also say that the way the Giants seem to acquire the injury bug in the preseason and everything, I would be very leery and scared to death to bring in a Finley. So you can count me as one of those fans who's not looking for that. All right. Now to answer your question about Reese, you know, looking at things now, and you know, unfortunately, it's easy to play Monday quarterback. But looking at it right now, yes, we should have given Martellus Bennett a longer deal or a better deal, because there's no doubt that letting him go has hurt this offense. And we now find ourselves, you know, 2 years later, still trying to fulfill that tight end role.
So, well, yeah, in hindsight, it would have been nice. But right. You do need to see it from the other perspective, where what happens if you give him a long-term deal and then all of a sudden you get locked up with a player that did not live up to expectations? Because remember, Martellus Bennett took advantage of the starting gig, but let's not forget, he had very limited opportunities behind Jason Witten in his first few years with Dallas.
Right, but when he came here, he played fairly well.
Did, I agree. No argument there.
Right, so then that's my point. I mean, You know, I understand about that, and to use your word, you know, hindsight. I mean, you know, if we could all predict the future, we'd all be billionaires, okay? So I mean, yeah, you know, it's always a give or take chance. You know, I'll go with for example, Beason. Like I said before, I was a person who wanted to get Beason. However, I will, you know, continue to say, not at the cost of Tuck, but I wanted to get Beason. Okay, so we got Beason, we paid Beason the money, and oh, by the way, he's hurt. So, yeah, you never know. You know. So,
well, there's
another
example. So that's why I think there's substance on both sides of the spectrum when it comes to this argument, because you just referenced John Beason as an example, and then you look at Martellus Bennett, a guy that got away that you wish you could have had. So, you know, it's very difficult for any GM to be put in that position, because sometimes it'll come back to bite you, and then sometimes it'll be the worst decision you ever made.
Right, I understand that, but I just think that Jerry tends to side on the one-year deal side, and I think that, you know, sometimes you have to kind of take a chance. You know, bottom line is, look, it's not perfect, and yes, you are bound to make mistakes. You know, that's the nature of sports, and that's the nature of deal-making. But I just think that...
Well, if there weren't mistakes, you know, we wouldn't have an opportunity to have this conversation on this program. So from a content perspective, Drew, I guess we need our fair share of mistakes, because then we couldn't play the coulda, woulda, shoulda game, and this program would be no fun. So, you know, I'm not complaining from that side of things.
Right. And then the other thing, man, you know, Eli in the offense, you know... I don't know where Steve was going, and I'm not criticizing Steve. That's not my point. I'm answering it this way.
Well, he'll just attack you on tomorrow's program, so don't worry.
No.
I know. I'm just playing with you.
Because I don't know where he's going. But here's my point that I'm trying to make. Okay. If I'm understanding Steve, I'll say this. Okay. The one thing that I will say about Eli is. And you look out throughout his entire career, Eli tends to favor a particular receiver, okay? And that tends to get him in trouble. I know when we have, for example, Burris, okay? I mean, it was Burris, okay? He did the same thing with Cruz a couple of years ago, and so on and so forth. So Eli tends to favor certain receivers, and there's nothing wrong with that. All quarterbacks, I guess, do that. But I do believe that Eli will spread the ball out because, you know, if the offense is doing what it's going to do, he's going to have to spread the ball out. And I think that, you know, obviously the offensive change with Ben McAdoo coming in, but let's not make the mistake again. Eli is not Rodgers, okay, from the standpoint that Eli isn't a mobile quarterback. However, Eli is a gunslinger, okay? So I do expect him. If this offense is, it works the way, you know, if it's a semblance of what it was in Green Bay, I do expect Eli to not only spread the ball, but pass the ball all over the field. Okay.
And I think that, like Steve laid out, that is probably right. The perfect assessment from the outside looking in. Because you look at,
right.
You
and,
get
and
a
that,
taste of what Green Bay does, and you get a taste of what Eli does, and you combine the two.
Right. Exactly. And in that case, I would agree with Steve because, you know, to me, I think this, I actually think this offense would actually benefit Eli and be better for him because it would utilize his strengths, which is Eli likes to pass the ball.
Absolutely.
So that's all I had to say.
But well, I think that, and I answered this question on Giants.com on our mailbag segment because somebody posed a similar question that you just brought up, Drew. But I think mm-hmm. that the way the Packers system operates and the way that the Giants system is going to operate, and this was something that Steve was talking about, they're going to basically play more around the strengths of the weapons they have surrounding Eli. So meaning if they've got a fast receiver, hey, let's get him the ball and let's not wait for Eli to throw it 20, 30, 40 yards down the field. You know, why make Eli work for it when we could get the guy the ball 5 yards away and then get the blocking up the field and so forth? Because Green Bay ran a lot of screens. For example, they would take Randall Cobb. They would put him out on the right side. Aaron Rodgers would throw it to him from 4 yards out, and then Cobb would gain 30 yards. And I'm not saying that it's going to be the exact repeat of the Packers offense, but if you look at what Jennings can do, you look at what Cruz could do, Odell Beckham, it would be foolish to say, let's just get these guys to run deep and have Eli air it out as he's done in the past, as you pointed out.
Right. I don't think that'll happen, but I didn't really see a lot of that even under Gilbride's system. I mean, yeah, Eli likes to air out the ball and everything, but I just, on the flip side, I will tell you right now, I don't really see us going to a short passing game either. I just really don't see that because that's not really Eli's strength. Okay, and the other thing that I wanted to bring up is if this offense is a lot quicker, I think that also benefits Eli because one thing that we all know and a lot of fans have complained and moaned about this is when Eli runs the hurry up offense.
I knew you were going to point that. Yeah, no, it's a great point, Drew, and that is something that McAdoo threw out and even Eli threw out. If this is overall a faster-paced offense, then that means it should mimic how effective he is during those last 2 minutes of halves. If he can do that throughout mm-hmm. the course of the game, you're right. All we take is phone calls during the season. Why don't the Giants do the hurry-up more during the third quarter and the fourth quarter? So if he's going to try to do that, McAdoo, then that should help Manning because when Manning has to play with his back against the wall, he tends to play at a very high level.
Exactly. All right, man. So, that's it. Oh, one last thing. You can answer this off the phone, man, for me. Remind me of Adrian Robinson again because I just looked and I see he's been with us for 3 years. And I know right now we all have this hope that, you know, because we need a tight end. We obviously need a tight end. So we all have this hope that Adrian is going to be the man. And I will tell you right now, I really hope that it's him because – I mean, yeah, it's all nice and pretty that, oh, yeah, Finley is there, but I just don't trust Finley. Okay, but at any rate, can you remind us who Adrian Robinson is again and, you know, what
you got
what he can do if he has it?
Sounds good, Drew.
Together.
Appreciate the phone call. I'm laughing because we have to go to the point where can you remind me about Adrian Robinson? And I understand Drew is actually being serious with the question, but it's somewhat comical because he hasn't been able to stay healthy. Robinson is entering year number 3. So Drew is right. He's had 2 years on this team. He was a fourth-round pick in 2012, 127th overall pick. He's out of Cincinnati. If you look back at his scouting report out of Cincinnati, Robinson was a blocker. Robinson was not a receiver in college. And part of it was not because of the things and characteristics that Robinson brought to the table. It was more of that was how the Cincinnati offense operated. They did not utilize the tight end. Here's his numbers from Cincinnati. He was there from 2008 to 2011. Over the course of his career there, he had one reception in 2008. He had 10 in 09. He had 6 in 2010. He had 11 in 12. So he had a total of 29 receptions over the course of his 4-year career with Cincinnati. Was not a receiver. And the Giants weren't necessarily believing that he was going to come in year one and have 75 catches or even 50. But they felt, this gets back to what he presented from a physical standpoint. You're talking about a 6'4 guy who showed some movement off the line as a blocker, and when he was expected to run routes, could be productive. And, you know, a matchup problem. I don't want to say a nightmare. That may be a stretch, but a matchup problem for a linebacker or a safety. That was pretty much the scouting report for Adrian Robinson. Now, this is one thing that hurt him in 2012 that everybody tends to forget. And right now, to point to it and say, oh, well, this is why he can't all of a sudden become a playmaker, wouldn't make sense. But I'm going to throw it out there anyway, and I've referenced this before. Cincinnati graduated much later than other colleges, so he had to stay back at school when the rookie mini camp had started and they had a couple of OTAs and mini camp. I don't remember the exact timetable, but I can tell you with certainty, Adrian Robinson did not join the team until, I want to say, at least a month or two later than all the rookies. So he doesn't have the playbook. He hasn't been in the meetings. He's playing catch-up that entire training camp. He's playing catch-up that entire preseason. So that's why you really, really can wipe out 2012, because the regular season was basically training camp for Adrian Robinson. And that's why we didn't see much of Adrian Robinson. Okay, now you get to last offseason. You can't throw out the playbook argument anymore. Robinson's had an entire year. So Gilbride can say to himself, all right, Robinson knows the offense now. What happened? Robinson's hurt. So he may know the offense, he may be in the meetings, but Robinson, he can't get out there on the field. Hurt during training camp. Can't play him. Then you get to the regular season. Still having those lingering injuries. So Adrian Robinson cannot be active. And this is what the whole storyline was all of last year. And you keep going back to Jerry Reese's comments, and a number of you remember the JPP of tight ends. Hey, the athleticism is there when he was drafted, the raw talent, this and that. And the scouting report out of Cincinnati backed that up to a certain degree. But hey, we could play the he looks like this on paper. I give you a good speech on Adrian Robinson. Makes no difference until you put him out there on the football field. And he just hasn't had an opportunity to get on the football field because of the injury. So it was the playbook to begin with, and then all of a sudden it was the injury argument. And that's what has been his storyline over the first 2 years. Now we enter another offseason. Health factor is there, meaning he's healthy. And the playbook thing, okay, you could bring that back to the forefront, but Adrian Robinson, you cannot separate himself from the rest of the pack. Why? Because Robinson's learning a new offense just like Eli Manning's learning a new offense. So if you want to say Adrian Robinson's having trouble with the new offense, I could tell you that Eli Manning's having trouble with the new offense and so forth. We can list everybody on the roster. So he can't use that as a crutch and to say, okay, you know, this is what I'm going to throw out there as to why I haven't fully developed. It's not there. Those factors are no longer evident. That's why, to me, it adds up with he's on the field. Now we're going to see the true Adrian Robinson. We're going to see what Adrian Robinson truly has to offer. All right, let's get to some more tweets and some more phone calls before we wrap things up. We go to Avery in New York. Avery, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, Lance? How's it going?
Do well, Avery.
I was tempted to say John, but,
well, I'm glad you caught yourself. See, Sean had a slip of the tongue earlier, but you redeemed yourself. So I appreciate
exactly. Yeah, I'm the TQ man online there on Twitter. I'm not happy. I would not want Finley here. I think that injury was just too severe. I think it was even worse than Wilson's, and I think it's too much of a risk. And I think, and also we have a history of making, you know, average or good tight ends look good or look better than what they actually are. And now we had a good tight ends coach. We got McAdoo here who really upgraded a little bit. Crabtree and the other one, Corliss is his name, or whatever, the other guy from Green Bay. So
correct,
I think
Andrew Corliss.
Andrew, I think we can really, you know, do something with the guys that we have. I'm not high on the Adrian Robinson one. I'm just not, you know. And for you, Nina, just hearing you say he caught 29 passes as a tight end in college, so that he only caught 19 more catches, and that's a tight end position, which is supposed to block and catch and receive, than our running back, even though it's two different positions, who had 10 for his college career. That's not saying a whole lot about the guy as a receiver.
Well, just to clarify for the audience, you're referring to Andre Williams out of Boston College.
Andre
you're
Williams.
Right. Correct. Who did not catch a lot of balls out of the backfield. But remember, you also need to take into consideration what the offense called for them to do at their school. So, for example, Boston College said, Andre Williams, you're going to run the ball 25 times. We don't need you to receive. Adrian Robinson in Cincinnati was not a big-time receiver. They relied on their wideouts. They relied on their running backs based on the personnel that was put in place. So, listen, I'm not disagreeing with you, Avery. It's not numbers that you want to see. You'd like to see him be a little bit more productive. But if he was constrained by the offense, it's hard to put and shoulder the blame on him for that.
No, I agree with you. But the thing is the premise of the tight end is to both receive and to block.
To have a balance.
Correct?
Yeah. Yes.
A balance of the two. And when, I mean, it's also about the school, so we'll go over it. But, you know, with all this tight end talk, you know, my biggest concern, honestly, Lance, is really that O-line and the pass rush. I think this is third on the or fourth on the list of necessity or things that we really need to be concerned about. And that, you know, I'm still not all that high on the O-line and so sure on that with between Snee and Beattie and I think those are a high. I know the subject of the today is about tight ends.
No, you can weigh in on the offensive line. I'm always up for anything. No worries.
But I'm just saying that that to me and the pass rush are my two bigger concerns than the tight end position because we got at least five guys we can choose from. We know none of them are going to be stars. We know that they're not going to be over the top. That we know they're not going to be great. You know, they're not going to be a bunch of Tony Gonzalez's here, but, you know, but at least I believe we can get some efficient and good play out of them. But the thing is the O-line and the pass rush. I mean, that's the part more so that I'm more concerned with. And Eli, you know, Eli's completion percentage has never been over 63% during the regular season. And since he's been a New York Giant, and I'm hoping that this new offense really can up that number to at least the 65-67% range or whatever the case may be. Do you believe that to be the case?
Well, getting back to what I was talking with Steve earlier in the program and Drew, and we were speculating about how this offense is going to run and whether there's going to be scripted plays, short passes. If Eli has those in his arsenal and they're high percentage throws, I would say there's a good chance that his completion percentage is going to be a little bit higher than where his career numbers are. Certainly going to be better than last season, I'll tell you that, regardless of how the offensive line performs, because I stand by what I've been throwing out all offseason. I think there's going to be a balance, and I'm not saying that every pass is going to be 5 yards, but there's going to be a lot more shorter passes than we've seen in the past, and therefore, I would consider those high percentage throws. Just like in basketball, if you take a layup or a 5-foot jump shot, those are high percentage shots because you're closer to the bucket. So if a quarterback is relying on high percentage throws, Avery, I would say you put two and two together. It's not a stretch to say his completion percentage is going to go up.
But that is in itself also is somewhat of a misnomer because you're throwing shorter passes, so it should increase it. But it's what you do with the ball after the catch. That's in that scenario. Then there's the balls. What they do after the catch would be more significant than the actual completion percentage.
Absolutely, meaning in terms of how fluid the offense is. I agree with you, but if we're just looking at Eli Manning as an individual player in the system, then all I can go based on is his completion percentage. But yes, after he gets rid of the football, then it depends on the blocking up the field and how crafty the wide receiver is in the running back. You're right, because Eli could throw 10 consecutive 5-yard passes, make all of the passes, but then they only move a few inches and it doesn't do any wonders for the offense. You're right.
It's sort of the same thing I say with the time of possession is what people make a big deal about that. It's a big deal, but the thing is if you're not really doing that much with the ball and you get down the field and you only get a field goal out of it and you've had the ball most or at least half the quarter, more than half the quarter, and you only get a field goal and the other team comes in and gets it in, you know, less time and then get a touchdown.
The other team could score 3 touchdowns in 40 seconds and you held the ball for 40 minutes and all you did was get 3 field goals and you lose by 10 points. Absolutely.
Exactly. So, you know, a lot of these statistics, I'm a big numbers person, so I like that kind of stuff. But, you know, you got to look at how it all plays out over time, through the course of the game or whatever. But anyway, that's for me, the tight end thing. I think we can get some good guys out of good production out of these guys. I don't want Finley. I think that injury was too severe. We have too many injury problems, and we don't want between Snead and Beattie and now Beeson and everything. We don't need to go that route. I think we can get hopefully some good production out of the guys that we have, three or four of the guys, and we could take it from there. But thanks for taking my call, Lance, and have a good day. Appreciate it.
You as well, Avery. Good stuff out of Avery in New York, joining us here on the program, Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. You can follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Before we wrap things up, just want to address some more of your tweets. And Sonny Boy, at SonnyBoy2323, who also chimes in a lot on Twitter, brings up an interesting question. I'll throw this out to the audience, and I would have to look back at all the rookie classes to give you an answer. I may want to think about this before I throw out an answer, but this is referring to the Adrian Robinson debate. And it's also tough to compare players that may have been hurt at another position and then blossomed in year number three. But it's a good question. Can you name a rookie that was injured for 2 years on the Giants that came in and turned their careers around? And you'd obviously have to turn to, I guess, to year number three if you went that route. Now, I'm bringing up the Giants draft history just so that I could see something, at least in recent history. I mean, I'm sure a number of you have followed the team for decades could probably give me some other examples. I have been around only so long to have knowledge of the history archives, but if we look at some of the recent draft history, maybe we can get somebody to throw out there that could fit what Sonny Boy is throwing out. And you'd have to go back to, first of all, probably 2011 if you're going to throw out that criteria. So 2011, see, Prince, remember, dealt with injuries early. I guess my question back to Sonny is if you want to clarify on Twitter, I mean, are we holding it to 2 years of literally no production? Or if I pointed to a guy that over the first 2 years was injury plagued, meaning in and out of the lineup, and then, you know, third year, all of a sudden things started to click, I'm sure we could probably find an example of that. It'd be hard to find another guy that for his first 2 years was clearly out of the picture. Remember, Adrian Robinson was out of the picture. That's what makes it so unique. There's other guys that I probably could bring up that were, you know, battling injuries here or there, but at least were in and out of the lineup. Robinson wasn't even in and out of the lineup. He was just not in the lineup. So that's why it makes it very difficult to find an exact player who would tie into all of the criteria put forth by Adrian Robinson. But getting back to the 2011 class, Jarrell Jernigan, he's interesting here. Now, Jernigan, 2014, that's going to be year number four for him. 2013 was year number three. Jernigan didn't really get much of an opportunity in 11 or 12. Part of it was because he was deep in the depth chart. The other part of it was because he was hurt. Now, did Jernigan have a breakout year in 2013? No. Did he have a breakout stretch of three games? Yes. So, you know, it depends on really what you expect of the player in year number three. Jernigan, I thought, flashed a little this season, but it's not as if he did it for 16 games. Brewer has struggled. Greg Jones is not on the roster. I'm looking over the 2011 class for those of you trying to follow along. Tyler Sash is no longer on the roster. Jaquan Williams played throughout his rookie year, so he's not a good example, and Darrell Scott is no longer on the roster. Then you go back to 2010. I don't want to sit here and go through the entire draft classes. If you want to throw out recommendations, feel free to do it, but I think it's fair to maybe throw out some of the recent players. Jason Pierre-Paul has pretty much been involved since he's arrived here for the Giants. Linval Joseph was productive pretty much from the get-go. Chad Jones, unfortunately, the car accident did not allow him to play for the Giants. Phillip Dillard's not on the team. Petras not on the team. Tracy not on the team. And because of the depth chart at his position, never really blossomed. And Matt Dodge is a punter and is also not on the team. So it's hard. It's going to be hard to find the guy. To answer Sonny Boy's statement on Twitter, yes, it's going to be very hard to find another Giant that missed 2 years and then all of a sudden things clicked in year number three. But I'm going to put on my optimistic hat here. Who's to say that there can't be a first? Who's to say that it can't be? Remember, Robinson has not done much of anything, but part of that is because he hasn't even been on the field to show us anything. So that's another thing to at least take into consideration. And I understand a lot of you are impatient, but a number of you, I think, who were calling in and tweeting in the later stage of the show helped balance out the majority, saying you're of the mindset, hey, let's see what the Giants have with these five tight ends before we all start knocking down the door. And I think at New York Giants hashtag threw it out best, tight end by committee. And it may get to that, where if they utilize two double tight end formations, they're just going to have a cluster of three and they'll rotate them. Who's to say you need one guy in particular that is going to all of a sudden put up all the quality numbers? So a number of you weighing in on the whole tight end situation. I think it's an interesting debate because it's the one position that's wide open more so than any other spot on this roster. We'll get into a different position. We'll get into more chatter on the NFC East. I know we didn't get into a lot on the other tight ends. Briefly went into some discussion, but I think you would all agree that when it comes to the rankings, Giants have the most question marks at tight end more so than any other position. We know what Jason Witten is going to give the Dallas Cowboys, and, you know, they have a mix of youth and veterans behind him, but Witten has showed his durability. Philadelphia is the type of team that, keep in mind, revolves their offense around the tight end and also likes to rotate guys. So it's not as if they need Zach Ertz to play X amount of snaps for the offense to click. Between what James Casey, who is with the Texans, he's entering a number of years in the NFL, Brent Celek and Zach Ertz, you've got three players that they can rotate and you can say, hey, they're going to bring this to the table. And Washington doesn't have Fred Davis anymore, who we talked about at the beginning of the show. Jordan Reed's coming off a very productive rookie campaign, but he suffered concussions, so that hurt his development in the last few weeks of the season. And then you have Logan Paulson and Niles Paul behind him. And let those two players, by the way, in particular, back up my claim about the Giants' tight end nucleus right now. Niles Paul and Logan Paulson, if I brought that up to the average NFL fan, those two names, probably that NFL fan would not recognize those names and couldn't tell me much about those two players. And there's nothing wrong with that because they're not household names. But if you followed the Redskins and you've seen them plugged into the system, they've made catches. They've been productive. So who's to say that the Giants can't get productivity out of the group right now? Before we start saying the Giants need a JerMichael Finley. Why? Because JerMichael Finley's a name, and I am going to feel warm and cuddly at the end of the day, and I'm going to sleep well at night knowing the Giants have a name tight end. Names do not win championships. The winners of free agency each and every offseason do not win championships. What wins championships, and Giants fans, you know it better than anyone else, because the Giants have gotten to that point quite often over the last few years. Chemistry wins championships. A team clicking on both ends of the field wins championships. A team getting hot sometimes at the right time wins championship. And most important, an organization that has structure. Okay, those are the elements that you think of that wins championships. Sitting here and saying the Giants have the best looking depth chart. Man, when I look at that tight end depth chart, that wows me. It's dynamic. You do not win a title based on what you have on paper. So I think that's a fair way to leave it. But there's a lot that has to be played out and a lot that these tight ends have to prove. That you can't dismiss when it comes to this conversation. So good discussion on the phones, good discussion on the tweets. We'll continue it tomorrow. If you want to weigh in more on the tight ends, if you didn't have an opportunity to get through, feel free to give us a ring on Tuesday. I'll be back with you on Tuesday morning and we'll break down another position and we'll talk all that's happening with respect to the New York Giants. And Paul is going to be with you on Wednesday, Thursday. We're going to split up the week even 2-2. So that's exactly what we have to offer for you here on Giants.com. Also, I advise you, if you have an opportunity, check out some of the videos that we're going to be posting on our site over the next few days, over the next few weeks, some mailbag questions that I've done. July 1st, that's tomorrow, we are going to be launching 20 questions in 20 days, and that will be a feature where we pose a number of questions heading into training camp. One of them is about the tight end position, could be about the defensive line, the backup quarterback, and some features that we've put together which will add to the conversation. And if there's anything you watch, by the way, on the website and you want to further the conversation, because some of those pieces are not necessarily interactive. You know, don't shy away from that. Feel free to bring it up. That's what this program is all about. It's to weigh in on everything Giants related. But we want a lot of the content on the site to be interactive. So if there's a video you saw and you want to reflect on it and so forth, feel free to chime in on Twitter, chime in on the phones. I use this forum as an open discussion. I like it to be restricted to a certain topic because I think that keeps the conversation on a focus point. But if you want to weigh in on anything else, I'm the last person to deny you that opportunity. So if there are any tweets that I did not address, I'll try to address that as we move throughout the course of the day. But it's always fun interacting, going back and forth with the Giants faithful. We'll continue the conversation on Tuesday. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Lance Meadows signing off here on Giants.com. Have a good one.